The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Are you a Smashburger king? Creating those crispy edges and the intense beefy flavor that puts fast food to shame? Thanks to Omaha Steaks, I never have to worry about whether I have high-quality proteins on hand. And they have so many options, handcrafted steaks, convenient comfort meals, and it's always excellent. Celebrate President's Day with the exceptional handcrafted flavor and convenience of Omaha Steaks. Get 50% off the world's best everyday protein. Go to omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their President's Day sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code YUM at checkout. Go to https://omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their President's Day sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At MyBookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. This is the Zabecast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Here we go. Greetings from a rainy and high of 50s, Scottsdale, Arizona. I demand a refund. It's kind of nuts just how a tiny click down in weather changes one's perception of a place. And I have loved coming to Scottsdale for years now. It is always such a happy place. And just because I got one bad day of weather, I'm looking around going, there's nothing to this place. I'm looking at the same old strip malls, the same old highways. Like, I once wanted to retire here. And I can't imagine it now because, well, the weather is just not as glorious as it normally is. Spring training is about to begin on what might be the last full season of baseball in a long, long time. And I would say there's a definite cloud hanging over things, even though hotel bookings and the town is starting to spool up in terms of baseball buzz. You see a lot of people with their favorite baseball team gear on. So it's spring training time for sure. But then you had the Tony Clark story from yesterday and the MLBPA chaos that has ensued. Well, there you go. Just what we did not need as baseball fans heading into the most important season, an important 9 months, I would argue, 9 months, 10 months of this sport for a generation, arguably. If they wipe out the World Series in a protracted lockout, trying to force a salary cap next year, this is it. This is the year. And the last thing the union needed was not just a weak president, but to have one who has now been ousted because of his, well, how do you even describe what he is being accused of or what is known already? It's bad. It's very bad. Now, there's one positive silver lining, which would be maybe a weakened and panicked union might cave a bit at the table. Maybe. And that would lead to perhaps a quicker resolution if they fold. I think the more realistic outcome is chaos and stalemate, and that this will be just another sticking point in the negotiations. Clark, by the way, has stepped down after an inappropriate relationship was disclosed with his sister-in-law. What? And putting aside what two grown adults do, whether they're relations from marriage of a family member or not, between the sheets, it's an inappropriate relationship that has more to it, such as, and let me try to summarize from a pretty complicated story that laid it all out, but basically for funneling money from a subsidiary of the union meant to make players more money and name and likeness kind of stuff, and then using the jobs with that subsidiary for family members and possibly spending other money unethically or, even worse, maybe embezzling. Only time will tell what shakes out. But yeah, not good at all. In fact, I was thinking about the line from Caddyshack when Danny Noonan's, his girlfriend, Maggie, says, "Oh, geez, that's all I need."
"I'm late."
"Late for what?"
"For not being pregnant."
"Oh, God."
"Yeah. Well, I don't hold you responsible. It's my problem. I can handle it, Daddy."
"Oh, Mag. Maggie. Look. I'm not going to let you go through this alone."
"No."
"Whatever you decide."
"I'm going to have it. I've already decided."
"Well, that's it then. We'll just get married."
"Oh, God, that's all I need."
"Look, I want to, all right?"
"No, you don't."
"Yes, I do."
"No, you don't."
"Yes, I do."
"Look, I don't want to get married, Danny."
"Oh, come on, Maggie, you're just saying that."
"No, I'm not." "Look, Danny, it might not be yours, okay?"
"Maggie, I know you're just making this up about the other guy, so I won't have to feel guilty."
"You're not making it up."
"All right, well, I'm still willing to marry you."
"Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for nothing."
This is all we need at this time. With that said, it is time to talk movies, Olympics, and more with our man about film, Matt Miller. Okay.
Almost entirely, yeah.
All right, well, we could do the old military thing. Flash, bang, flash. And then you respond with bang.
Bang, flash.
Flash.
Bang.
It only works if I do it to you. Matt,
you get the impression
Miller,
I was not military trained.
Matt Miller is with us now on a glorious Thursday. Mr. Miller, how are you? We got movies to talk about. We have the Olympics to talk about from a cinematic standpoint, because the broadcast has been using a lot of great cinematic features, techniques, and storytelling elements. And I want to nerd out about them with you. So I'm glad you've been watching almost as much as I have, if not maybe more. Right?
Absolutely.
You're logging a lot of hours.
I'm a Wisconsinite. Wisconsin loves the Olympics. We traditionally overperform in the ratings every year for both the winter and I think even the summer Olympics. Yes. I was trying to find specific numbers for like Wisconsin's love of the Olympics, and I was having a hard time finding those. But like this year, Milwaukee is the third highest ratings of the entire country for this year's Winter Olympics, behind Minnesota, which isn't entirely surprising since, you know,
right,
all the hockey and all the sports. And for some odd reason, Fort Myers. I don't know what that's about.
Fort Myers. Well, old people. I would imagine
and you
old
know what?
People have the time.
And snowbirds. I bet you Fort Myers does really well because it's all of
Canadians
and people like my parents who go down to Florida this time of year, and they're like, oh, the Olympics. So frankly, that should be Wisconsin numbers too. But even in the past, you look and Milwaukee has like been a top rated market for the Olympics in a lot of years. And Milwaukee is, I think, like the 37th. Like, it's in the 20s or 30s in terms of national markets. It's famously Milwaukee is famously a bad market.
Yeah, but it's not 32nd. You're not the 32nd size DMA or defined market area, according to Nielsen. You know that, right? I hate to bring it down like this because I know there's great Milwaukee pride.
38 is what I'm seeing.
You're actually looking it up right now?
According to, if I'm looking right here, Wikipedia.com.
Oh, okay.
They say that we are 38th.
38, okay. I thought you guys were like 52. I apologize. Read the cities behind Milwaukee.
We are behind Cincinnati. No,
not behind. Read the ones after you. Markets 59, 60, 61.
Oh, so on this list, 39,
40, 41, sorry.
Yeah, 39 is West Palm Beach. 40 is Las Vegas, which I bet that has changed. And then 41 is Jacksonville.
Okay. All right, so fine. Look, it's not the size of the city, it's the quality of the people. And the people in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, they love their winter sports. It doesn't hurt that the cradle of speed skating excellence is right there, hard off of 94 West, the Pettit Ice Center, which is a giant indoor oval sheet of glimmering ice that has delivered Olympic champion after Olympic champion.
It is a brick bunker of a building. Like, it is a not flashy building whatsoever, but it's weird. I'll talk to my wife about the Olympics. She grew up in Minnesota. She's a Minnesotan. And we'll talk about people like Dan Jansen and Bonnie Blair, and she will have no idea who those people are. And I was a Wisconsinite, like, that's like on birth certificates and stuff like that.
I was going to say, how does she not know those two champions?
I don't know. I wonder if Dan Jansen, that story is such a Wisconsin legend that, you know, this guy had this massive failure one year, a Ilya Malinin type failure, right, and then comes back, triumphs incredibly. Bonnie Blair, an incredibly accomplished, you know, Olympian in her own right. And for some odd reason, it's just always those stories just live on entirely in Wisconsin lore. And again, I'm sure beyond too, but definitely Wisconsin legends. And there, I mean, Bonnie Blair, I see her and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's Bonnie Blair. And my wife is like, that is just a 60-year-old woman. I don't understand.
So the Dan Jansen story, and I'm going to mess up some of the details on this, so help me out. He was heavily favored to win gold, but then fell, which happens not as much as in short track, obviously, which is really roller derby on skates, which is great. He fell, and then his next chance at a medal in a slightly different distance, he fell again.
And there was a passing, too. There was like news of a death in his family.
Family member? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then was it that same Olympics that he ended up winning after those two falls, or did it take a whole nother four-year cycle? That's kind of what I...
Yeah, the specifics, it was technically like I was like 3 or 4 years old at the time that this happened. So I don't know the entire specifics, but it was like one Olympics fail, you know, and this massive emotional backstory, and then comes back and triumphs. I believe Lillehammer, he comes back, wins the 1,000 meters.
Got it. Okay, so he did redeem himself, which... As we talk movies and Olympics, I just looked this up. There are 7 basic movie plot types. You're familiar?
Yes. That's simplistic, but yes.
Does it insult you as a man of film that people quote the 7 types of movies as if that's the only things there are? Because there's more.
Sure it's like when if you talk to like a food person and it was just like, there's really only 5 dishes, and you'd be like, what?
Yeah. What one of the basic sort of plot lines is the hero's journey, which the hero tries, the hero fails, the hero doesn't give up, and then eventually the hero prevails.
The rejection of the call.
So that would be the Dan Jansen kind of prototype. Here's the seven types: overcoming the monster, rags to riches, the quest, voyage and return, comedy, tragedy, and rebirth.
And then also the emoji movie. That's the eighth one. They're working on, you know, it's just really innovated in the space of storytelling, the emoji movie, that it's got to be its own type.
Gavin, did you see the emoji movie? Did you see it? Did you watch it? Did we go see it? Was it any good? I forgot. 2017. All right, it was in 2017. I don't know if we saw it or not. I sleep through half of her movies anyway, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, it was funny. She said it was funny.
Patrick Stewart voices a poop, you know?
Yeah, Patrick Stewart played the role of the poop emoji. I mean, what's not to like? Yeah.
Oscar nominated, right? No.
Right. Okay, so you had other great failures, tragic failures on the ice where the pressure is the highest. You mentioned Ilya Malinin, the quad god. He just didn't have it on his final skate. And then there was, I believe her name is Amanda Green. Ooh. She's the female figure skater who stepped into it on the social political front. By talking about, you know, that she is, you know, she's, I think she's bi or queer or whatever
Amber
her identity
Glenn.
Is.
Yeah.
Amber Glenn. Okay. Not, what did I say?
Amanda Green.
Amber Glenn.
May have been in the Twilight movies, if I'm remembering
right. Right. You know, she put both feet down in the puddle of it early in the Olympics. And I'm not saying she was wrong to do it. If you feel like you need to speak your truth. Now, she was kind of goaded into it by some reporters that just wanted to get that soundbite out of her. I'm not saying she's wrong for doing it, but it comes with a price. It comes with the price of now your brain is off topic. It's off focus. You're not as locked in. She said she got a lot of hate online, which I don't doubt. There are lunatics out there and bad people. And there's also bots as well. So you don't know. And she fell badly and really biffed her whole routine, finished 13th.
Yeah.
So that is a tragedy that is cinematic.
Yeah, and it's tough for these athletes because especially these are niche sports for the most part. And I'm sure they're like, this is my moment, you know? Only once every 4 years are people going to give a crap about anything I have to say about anything. So this is important. But it also adds this entire extra weight. And I'm sure she's probably going to say it at some point, but like the weight of all of the pressure of expectations and also people rooting for her to fail, you know, you're just adding a whole extra amount of difficulty to an extremely difficult sport. But, you know, we saw this with Nathan Chen, not on the social media, you know, popularity side, public speaking side of things. Nathan Chen, the figure skater who was super favored, I believe, in 2 Winter Olympics ago to be the men's figure skating winner. He botched it. He biffed his routines, finished really poorly. I don't remember the exact place. And then comes back, wins gold, triumphs. And I think that's kind of got to be your vision quest if you are Ilya Malinin,
right.
If you're, you know, Amber Glenn of like, okay, I sucked this time. Hopefully 4 years from now, I get the redemption story. But you got to wait 4 years. And I mean, figure skating, it is a gnat's lifespan in that sport. It is so funny, the differences in these sports where you've got like 37-year-olds and even 40-year-olds competing in like luge and skeleton and bobsled and thriving, not just there, but meddling. And then you've got figure skating where it's like 34, geez, grandma, get off the ice, or 20, 24. Like, what are you doing out here?
Hey, Sonia Henny, move over. Let the kids take in.
Here's your walker. Please leave the ice rink.
You know, in figure skating, they up the minimum age. Did you know that?
Oh, really?
That yes, that Tara Lipinski, who I think does a good job of commentating. I think she won a gold medal at 15. Don't quote me on that. Reason I can't look things up is the reason I can't look things up as nimbly as I normally do is I've got my laptop propped up for a better camera angle right now in the hotel room. I can't get my hands up on the keyboard. You don't need to know about it, whatever. So she won it at 15, and there used to be little pixies, 13, 14, 15, 16, or 15, 16-ish that would compete and be very good. One of the Russian 15-year-olds tested positive for a pretty powerful steroid, and the IOC
Russians
was like,
"What? No,
yeah, right." And the IOC is like, "Yeah, I think we got a problem here because there's. I'm pretty sure this 15-year-old girl didn't say, give me the nandrolone, I need it." So that means her coaches are slipping drugs into her without her knowledge and without her parents' knowledge, and that is, well, fucking evil. If I can summarize it into two words. So they're like, we're going to have to up the age just a bit. So you're never going to see a super young champion anymore, at least in the Olympics. Now, I love the Japanese couple that won their dance or long form. Do you see those, that couple?
Yes. What were their names? I'm looking, quick looking.
While you look up the names, here's the point I want to bring up with you, Mr. Man About Film, is that I am always compelled by how well and how cinematic the producer in the truck for the Olympics makes those things turn out. Now, what I watched was the NBC curated version. So that could have included some post edit decisions where they go, okay, hold on. They had a little bit more time. It wasn't necessarily live per se, but every shot, Miller, has a purpose and has a justification. And so when they are gently pushing in almost the most subtle push, where you have to really notice it, but it adds attention to the shot, a push in on that young woman's face from Japan. And the face was so fascinating and expressive. It was at the same time blank, but full of excitement, terror, wonder, what are the scores going to be? And there's a gentle push in. And they stayed on that shot a good long time. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a great director because he knows you, the viewer, should absorb this woman's face and realize this is her life's work that is coming down to a moment right now. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's Riku Miura and Ryuichi Kihara, I believe.
Yeah, who's the guy? Who's the girl? Come on now. Let's see how good your Japanese is.
I believe Ryuichi is the male and Riku is the woman.
Do they name the woman first or the man first? Is the patriarchy still dominating where the man gets listed first in pairs?
Looks like the woman gets named for. I do not know enough about the logistics of pairs skating, but I will say this Olympics has been, I mean, cinema. And I've been watching a ton of it. I've been doing like the raw Peacock feeds, which, boy, that sentence is terrifying. You got to really make sure you pronounce that
scrub
right.
Your timeline after that one.
Yeah, but like on if you have Peacock, the NBC streaming service, they will put all of the just pure raw feeds with the announcers, and then the nighttime shows tend to, you know, kind of cut the fat, cut the and put in some of more of the segments of, you know, the behind the scenes and, you know, what their lives are like. But they've been incredible. Whoever put the drones on the NBC Olympics coverage budget deserves to be in charge of NBC Universal. The drone footage in the downhill skiing and the luge and the skeleton and just across the board has just been purely visually incredible to watch. Like, just the speed, just that angle is thrilling to watch. They should never not have that.
I complained that there was not enough of the footage. They only gave you a 10-second clip. An emailer said, I got it, Zabe. Call it the drone zone on a separate channel where it's literally just all drone footage.
And who would complain?
I'd say sign me up.
Right.
Give it to me. Yeah.
And all right. Secondly, bring up the skating.
You're about to go secondly. Okay. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, not a problem at all. It's interesting you bring up the skating scimitar because this is actually the first Olympics that they have a person on ice skating with a camera.
While the performers are doing their routine?
Yes. This is somebody
I did not know that.
Yeah, he's very careful, and he's obviously keeping a lot of distance and like trying to make sure. But like, he has a camera rig during
Steadicam.
It's like one he's designed particularly. Like it's like him designed, I guess, which may or may not be. That might just be marketing on his part. But yeah,
For broadcast, they usually have the chest harness stabilizer.
Which he is not on the ice during the routines. This is important to note, which makes sense. But
I thought you said he was.
He is not. I misread what I've said. But there is still like somebody who goes out onto the ice and is like capturing them in those like intimate moments
about,
where they're getting on and off the ice and stuff.
Okay, how about after the routine is over? Is there somebody out there?
Yes.
To then go push in. Okay, sort of like in the NFL now, there's the end zone guy after a touchdown. He's got the big steady harness.
The guy with the home runs in baseball who runs out to home baseline to follow the guy in. Yeah, they have that, but it's a former ice skater now who's like getting out of the ice, like getting out there. And it does add a new level of intimacy to this broadcast. You don't feel as much of the remove. And obviously when you have these big emotional storylines in this Olympics, it feels even more so when you've got the camera like, you know, right there and really getting in without being too, you know, without like literally being like inches away from the face, being like, feel things.
Yeah. Well, this is similar to, and I love the on-horse interview host of the Kentucky Derby, the woman in the red coat who's got the mic, and she clip-clop, 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 rides up next to the winner and then interviews the winner horse to horse. Fucking love that.
Who's the person who was like, I love horses and I'm also a television journalist. I could combine these two things into a very niche career.
Right, exactly.
But you talk about memorable shots of the Olympics, too. I forget which skier it was. It was one of the, I don't think it was moguls, but it was like one of the slalom events. He was leading and all he had to do was not suck on the final run. And he sucked on the final run. He missed a gate by like a centimeter and disqualified. And he chucks his sticks into the crowd and he starts angrily. Literally just like, yeah, fear, like, and just starts literally taking a 90 degree angle, walking into essentially the woods. Next to the hill.
I need just to see that clip.
Goes through the fence and like just starts walking. And the camera, again, incredible direction from NBC. The camera starts panning out slowly and you just see him like storming off through like a field of white snow and like walking towards this woods. And he just kind of lays down against the fence by the woods. And just like, it would have been an incredible shot in an Oscar movie. And this is a shot in, you know, 3 o'clock NBC Olympics coverage.
Ingemar Johansson misses the gold by 1/10 of a point and was walked into the woods, was never seen from again.
That's
where did
Ingemar
go?
And the
we
shot
have no totally, idea.
he is amongst the woods now.
We think he was eaten by a bear. We're not sure.
He is a forest person now. I hope he doesn't come back until 4 years later where he just like reemerges with a giant beard.
Huge beard.
Tom Hanks Castaway style.
Right. Narrowed glint and says, Ingemar is back.
Puts the skis back on and goes down the hill. Still misses the gate, throws the sticks back into the crowd.
Did you see, speaking of cinema, the perfection of the moguls race where the one guy finished backwards?
Insane.
It was not just insane. It was because it came down to the final 100 feet and the last jump, he flipped in a weird sort of out of control way, the wrong way, basically, but still landed like a cat on his feet, but was going across the finish line backwards. And because of the way the angles were cut, you just saw mayhem because you had one angle that showed him cutting across the screen, another angle that showed him going down backwards. The announcers are going crazy trying to figure it all out. I mean, it was perfect.
Yeah, because it was that weird duels moguls, I believe, which is a new event this year. where side it's two side. People. Yeah. And it's not a speed thing. It's not a race, because as I was very confused watching the sport, you can finish ahead. You can finish first. But if your skills on the two
stylistic, okay,
aren't impressive enough, like your time doesn't matter that much. That's just one component, which I think is kind of weird. Either you're a race or you're a style thing. Come on.
Yep.
But yeah, he like did a jump, landed bad, almost crashed, saved it by spinning backwards essentially. And yeah, then crosses the finish line and I don't think he won gold. He might have, but it's just, this is why the Olympics deliver every year. And maybe yeah. part of it is that it's only every 4 years. So, you know, you get, you don't wear out the excitement.
Each version, right. Each version is only every 4 years.
Yes. Yeah.
They smartly decided to stagger the winter summer to spread it out about 20 years ago, I want to say, maybe longer. But yeah.
I think longer ago. But yeah, I mean, if we had this every winter, would it be as exciting?
No.
I don't know.
No.
But if you have it every 4 years, and every 4 years you're reminded, like, oh, that's right, moguls is insane. Oh, that's right, luge is sledding on crack. You know, watching these sports again and like refreshing yourself on the rules, watching curling and being like, oh my God, I've become America's leading expert on this crazy rock sport now.
Yeah.
It's such a fun thing. I just love the Olympics.
I also, I one of the dumbest ideas ever, this guy Dan Wolkin, USA Today, said, we should put basketball in the Winter Games. And I'm like, no, in a million years, no. It then got me to thinking, is there a sport in the Winter Games that doesn't have ice or snow in it?
Ooh.
I don't think so.
I don't believe so. I believe they're all snow bay. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. I'll try to pull up a list. I will say I'm a weirdo who doesn't love Olympic hockey as much as some people. That is not why I watch the Olympics. I watch the Olympics
so good
for
though.
It is so good. I'm not complaining about Olympic hockey.
Because these are the best players in the world and they're playing full hard on check your ass into the boards.
Yes, and there's the national pride, there's the history, and all. Like, I'm not saying Olympic hockey is bad. I'm just saying if I have a
you're
chance
not
to watch,
as into it
because I have hockey every year. You know, I can watch hockey. You know, I'm sure it cracking is, things are on. You know,
I know it is almost all NHLers. Somebody asked me, I forget. Someone in my family said, "Are they all NHLers?" I go, "I think for our team in Canada, yeah. I'd imagine for some of the lesser teams like Italy, probably not."
Yeah, I'm sure Sweden is mostly, you know, I'm sure that's mostly NHL at this point. But yeah, I this is my time to get really immersed into insane sports. I will get immersed into hockey when the NHL playoffs roll around.
Okay, fair point. And that brings me to my last thing about the Olympics, and then we can move on to some movies talk. The fact that these Winter Games are all absurd sports, and I say that with no malice, but I say it for a reason. They're sports that should not exist anymore and should not endure anymore, and nobody should devote their life to them by any means, yet people do.
Which one do
and
you
yet
think
people
of right
do
now?
Well, I'm thinking of half of them basically. Okay. So these are such weirdo winter sports, and nobody should devote their life to them. Nobody should cry when they don't medal in them. They are the dumbest things to ever pour yourself into, but that makes it pure, Matt Miller. Mm-hmm. That makes the Winter Games one of the purest things. Sport for sport's sake, much like art for art's sake. The floor is yours.
Absolutely. And that is kind of the purity of it, where you get these people who love, you know, biathlon, which is basically just winter survival : the sport. It's just, you know, get through a forest and shoot your prey, but do it, you know, in a controlled way and don't actually kill anybody. Right. It is pure because you just have people who love who have day jobs and, you know, they have to, because you're not going to make, you know,
there's no pro biathlon league that pays millions of dollars. You got to have a real job.
I mean, I'll be interested. I'm sure they'll add more sports as the years go. I know my sister does synchronized ice skating, or she did. And there's always been talk of trying to add that to the Winter Olympics, which is basically like synchronized swimming, but on ice. And you think that would, considering that ice skating is the primo event, or one of the primo events, at least.
No, it is. It's the queen of the show.
It's the star maker. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And we have three Americans who are going tonight that I did not know anything about until I saw the little preview of them and their stories and their styles and everything else. And I'm like, okay, this is why this event delivers, because it's everybody in a virtual way thinking, what if that was my daughter and how proud I would be for her, and also how fucking nervous I'd be watching them compete, knowing a single slip, gone, all that hard work.
There's that interesting
4 a.m. ice time gone.
There is that interesting mashup of the Olympics where you have these sports that are like ice skating that are very finessed and are very like, you have this small window and it's so pressured. And then you have sports like snowboarding that were birthed out of kind of the X Games and out of a different culture than the rest of the
culture. Man. Yeah,
exactly. So you have ice skating where, like, if you fail, it's like, I've failed myself. I've failed my family. I've failed my society. I don't know how I will move past this. And then you have snowboarding where, other than our guy who chucked his stuff and went into the woods, you have people who like crash out on the final race. They're like, that was pretty sweet, guys. And there's EDM music blasting in the background. It's just such a fascinating clash of cultures. Yeah. I do think one final note on ice skating is we are at an interesting kind of inflection in that sport. My sister talks about this a lot, again, an ice skater, where you've noticed the scoring system's changed. And there was the big controversy with the Canadians, and now you have that number system where individual moves are scored and ranked, and it's kind of a little bit more transparent. But the result, and you have these people doing quads, which were moves that people have them landing years ago.
They also review certain moves.
They review things, and there's constant, you know, they're trying to make it transparent and scientific. And it is a little bit like the replayization of football and of sports, where this thing that had a art and had a kind of, you know, energy to it, it is becoming a science. And it's becoming if you do enough of this move, you know, the artistry, the performance of this sport doesn't matter as much. There were a lot of people concerned that, like, Ilya Malinin, I've like pronounced his name four different times on this. He's kind of hacked the game, because it's like, well, if you can land these quads and land them cleanly, you don't have to be like an attractive ice skater. You don't have to do an interesting routine. You can just kind of land these incredible jumps and be like,
okay. It's like being Steph Curry. It's like shooting threes.
Mm-hmm. If you're
that good at shooting threes, and nothing else matters. It's like Bryson DeChambeau. If I can hit the ball a million miles, it kind of makes golf easy.
Yeah, but and does that
happens in every sport? It does. Yeah. But every sport we have, Miller, has been pretty much hacked by the data. The more data we have, so why in baseball, a game you love, guys are like, hitting singles is worthless. So Pete Rose, Ichiro Suzuki, Tony Gwynn, they're chumps by today's standards. And there was a great SI article that explained exactly why hitting singles is for chumps. And it made sense once I read it.
Yeah.
Basically, like, you would think, hey, getting on first is good, right? You got to run around. Okay, let's see what's happening. And these guys explained it like, but now somebody else has to hit at least a single. And it's really hard. It's better to just try for doubles and home runs.
If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 Amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. laughing. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
So, yeah. All right. Let's move on to the movies. You said to me before we came on, you said that the movie industry has been on a run lately. There's been some really good movies that have come out, and it frustrates you that the Oscars are still a month away, and so you can't really talk about it. But I want to hear about some of the movies that have come out recently that you like.
Yeah, and part of what that I said about that was this is the past 2 months, January and February are oftentimes treated as this dead zone, dumpuary.
Junk.
You know,
yeah.
The joke from Red Letter Media was always, you know, fuck you, it's January. You know, that's how the studios treat the beginning of the year, where it's like, I don't know, we made some bullshit, go watch it. Right. And the past 2 months and even 3 months have been really exciting as a film person, because there's been a lot of stuff in theaters that isn't we're not talking about franchises. We're not talking about, you know, big blockbusters or anything like that. It is the kind of movies that they've forgotten how to make, kind of mid-budget movies across multiple audiences that don't need to make $1 billion to break even, that don't need $1 billion to be a success. And people are showing up for them, where you haven't had a single movie crack $100 million this year, but we are up the highest amount at this point of this year compared to the other previous years since 2020. This is
up
the best
in terms of box office dollars.
Yes, we
From
are
what
ahead.
Date to what date? Is it the calendar year, or is
yes.
there a different cycle for movies?
So January to February 18th, when we're recording this, 19th, when you're listening to this, the box office is higher now than it was at this point in the past 5 years.
Okay, so apples to apples, this time yes. of year to the previous 5 years. Okay, good.
And I think so what's exciting about that is that, you know, it hasn't been, you know, last year at this point, we had a Marvel movie. In previous years, we had, you know, a Spider-Man No Way Home from Christmas that was making a ton of money. And this year is doing well, not because of some big blockbuster or big name product, but just a bunch of kind of smaller movies that have found audiences that people are showing up for. Stuff like Send Help, the Rachel McAdams, Dylan O'Brien, What If Castaway and 9 to 5 had a baby, and that baby had a bloodlust, you know? Like, that movie is so much fun. And
did you see it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a hoot and a holler. I
so
great
it's good. It. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So for those that don't know,
in Drag yes. Me to Hell mood, yeah.
Rachel McAdams is the one bankable star. Who's the guy in it?
Dylan O'Brien, who was in the Maze Runner movies. He almost okay. died filming one of those Maze Runner movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was doing a stunt for the third one, and I think he almost got hit by a train or a car or something.
Jesus.
And like, they were like, oh yeah, we're not sure if he's going to survive, much less how we're going to finish the movie.
Wow.
The director got put in director jail for a bit. He's fine.
God bless him for still doing practical effects, which are yeah, rolling away at the dodo bird.
And surviving.
Yeah, right, and surviving. Okay, so Rachel McAdams plays a pretty much bullied low office secretary, personal assistant.
nebbish accounting person. Yeah.
Yes. And then the plane crashes on a deserted island and she's mostly unscathed, but her asshole boss is crippled and has to rely on her now.
Yes.
Ooh, good stuff.
And okay. It's very fun. The dynamics are great. It's directed by Sam Raimi, who obviously did The Evil Dead. That was how he got his start. Did Drag Me to Hell. Loves a disgusting effect. Will always throw more ketchup and more pus into a scene than necessary. And that's what you get in this movie. Just very, very entertaining, gross, fun dynamics. It's a hoot and a hollering.
Okay.
And it's really done well this year. You have, and speaking of weird directors making a comeback, Gore Verbinski, the very strangely named Gore Verbinski, guy who directed the first three Pirates of the Caribbean movies, aka the three that are worth a damn, has been in also director jail because he's too weird. Like, he makes really strange, expensive movies.
What is director's jail exactly? Explain that.
It's an informal thing, but basically, if you make a big flop, or you made a movie that kind of sucked and no one wants to talk about and you lost a studio a bunch of money, you kind of get put in director jail. And it's basically like all the studios are like, yeah, we don't really want to mess. We don't really want to bother making a movie with you.
Are you saying that Gore Verbinski is being sent to voicemail on a regular basis when you're in director jail? Hey, it's Gore. This great idea. Just give me a call. I'd like to run it by you.
Very much so. And sometimes
it's Gore again. I know you're busy and all. Just want to leave you another message. Killer idea. Would love to run a bio. If you got 5 minutes, just give me a ring.
I know he tried to make a Bioshock. I think a lot of his director jail time was spent trying to make a Bioshock movie, which is a video game that was really popular like 10, 15 years ago. And I think he probably wanted like an obscene amount of money to do it right. And the studios were like, but why would you do that? Please don't. And then he made a movie called A Cure for Wellness, which made like $17 at the box office that involved horrible dentistry, eels, and incest. And I think everyone was like, all the studios were like, huh, that's interesting. You should take a time out.
Yeah, but wasn't the movie The Shape of Water completely insanely weird?
It is a weird business, Hollywood, where you can be, you know, you can do something strange like A Shape of Water, like a Guillermo del Toro or a Yorgos Lanthimos with Poor Things and Begonia and stuff. And your weirdness can tap into an audience on a level that Hollywood's like, I guess you know what people like. That happened with the Wachowskis. They made The Matrix, which was, you know, reimagined action movies, changed the genre, becomes an absolute sensation. And so Hollywood was like, keep making more of these movies. And they were like, great. We made a very two really weird sequels to our hit movie, one of which ends with a guy in a room full of TVs speeching. And then we made a Speed Racer movie that hurt people's eyes.
Right. I remember Hollywood's like,
yeah, here's your blank check. We've ripped it up. No more.
Like, no more. You're too weird now. Well, you know, and the two of them did transition. So they're now women. And
a lot going on. And then they made the new Matrix sequel, and everyone was like, this is even weirder than the other Matrix sequels. What are you doing? But that's the fun of Hollywood. And I think we'll probably talk a little about AI, is that there is no formula for what people, audiences will react to, you know?
What about the movie? Did you see the movie Good Luck, Don't Die?
That is the Gore Verbinski movie. It's called Have Fun, Good Luck, Don't Die.
Okay, got it.
Starring Sam Rockwell, Haley Lou Richardson, Juno Temple, and
no,
not
but, and
AI.
And was it any good?
Oh, it's great. I love it. It's an anti-AI movie about a guy who comes. It's very Terminator coded, where a guy from the future shows up and is like, listen, the future sucks. AI and your screens ruin everything. I need freedom fighters to gather up right now. And he gathers up like five people, and they have to journey to try to stop this AI. And it's so much weirder than that.
Okay. All right. I'm in, because I have often said, you know, if I could time travel, you know, time travel is a big thing with me, Miller. If I could time travel, I would somehow try to time travel back and strangle the internet in its crib. Little baby internet. I'd like to go. And I would stare into
its
eyes.
This is a very difficult
eyes.
Conversation to have because the internet would not be allowing this if it didn't exist.
Listen, I'm not saying there wouldn't be collateral damage. I'm talking about for the good of society, the whole of society. Either
you're
that,
not wrong.
Either that, or I would go back in time and I'd make Mark Zuckerberg really buff and tall so that he was an athlete and he played in the NBA. And then he didn't do all the shit that he did. Like, that'd
You'd
be my
be like
second
the person who would be like, my thing would be to teach Adolf Hitler to be a better painter. So that way he wouldn't become like a global leader instead. Yeah.
Listen, if I could have gotten Zuckerberg laid in college, then he would have never made Facebook. I mean, you know, that would be
the
end run.
We wouldn't have The Social Network, one of the best movies of the 20th and 21st century. So.
Did you like that movie?
Oh, it's incredible. I'm terrified for the sequel that they're making.
Oh, no. What's that?
Yeah, they're making a Social Network 2 about the Cambridge Analytical, and already people are like, oh, God, they're going to make a whole movie about that.
What's the Cambridge Analytical?
It was some insane. It was one of the I don't know. That's part of the reason why this movie's not going to be
the electroshock experiments that they used once. That was very controversial.
No, is that the Milgram experiments or something?
Yeah. There you go. Something like that. Yeah.
But like David Fincher's not coming back. It's directed by Aaron Sorkin, who is a great screenwriter, but a pretty boring director. And then, like, none of the original cast is coming back. I think it's Jeremy Strong and a decent cast, but it just seems like a bad idea, and I'm not about it.
All right.
But yeah, have fun. Good luck. Don't die. Very funny. Very weird. It has some tonal tightrope things where it does a subplot about school shooting that is funny in a way that you would be like, there's no reason for this to be working as well as it is. This is a go to jail if you do this wrong, and they do it right. It's a really, really good movie.
Okay.
Yeah. But in general, right. You have movies like The Housemaid doing well, becoming a monster hit.
Sydney Sweeney, The Housemaid, has crossed the $700 million mark worldwide.
I don't think that high. I believe it crossed $361 million worldwide, which I know is not Avatar money.
But it only cost 80 or something.
Yeah, it only costs $60 million. And now it has made this massive recoup on its money. It's of a
psycho Sydney Sweeney as the housemaid who turns on the family, right?
It's a twisty kind of Gone Girl kind of thing where it's, okay. You know, people.
It's not her in bouncing. It's not just her bouncing and flouncing around with her God-given assets.
Right. You can find that elsewhere at the internet.
That would make $900 million. That would make $1 billion. But they're not ready to make that movie just yet. Okay.
I think they talked about making a Barbarella movie with her.
Really?
I believe that has been something in the works.
And then they dusted off some of the old concept notes from the Jessica Simpson Dukes of Hazzard reboot and said, yeah, maybe not. Maybe we got to have something more than just a good looking body in tight jeans.
Yeah, because people can get that for free. Like Sydney Sweeney's Instagram is free, y'all.
yes. But to see her Instagram on a 50-foot tall screen, all in IMAX, all
with other people. Do you want to be in an audience full of like.
Listen, I'm not going to do anything, you perv.
Like me.
I'm not going to do anything. But that, look, there is something about, you know, an actress who you really like, who has it for you, that combination of charm, charisma, facial looks that tickle your own aesthetic sweet spot. When you see them for 2.5 hours on a big screen, it's quite enjoyable. You know,
it's called a movie star, man.
I think
people got really hard on Sydney Sweeney. Man, the sentence structure, I got to really work on that. People got really tough on Sydney Sweeney when she had all these kind of indie flops in the fall. You know, she had stuff like Americana and Eden and the Christie boxing movie that made absolutely no money. Christie, historically so. And I think Sydney Sweeney smartly was like, let's also make a book-based thriller and remind audiences, remind studios that women see movies too. Women read books and want to see movies based on those books. And you saw it with Wuthering Heights this past Valentine's Day weekend. And you saw it with It Ends With Us, the Blake Lively movie, which, yes, has become a bad headline magnet, but also made $300-some million on a low budget. You know, the Sex and the City movies made a ton of money. Hollywood always forgets. Women see movies too. It doesn't just have to be explosions. And so it's nice to see something like The Housemaid doing well. Song Sung Blue, the Hugh Jackman, Kate Hudson movie, made a lot of money for a movie about Neil Diamond cover singers in the Midwest.
In Milwaukee. That's a hell of a story. And a real story, based on a real story too.
Incredible true story, yeah.
My buddy, occasionally Angry Scotty down in Houston, texted me out of the blue. Out of the blue. He goes, women swooning over the love scenes in Wuthering Heights? Yeah, she's literally cheating on her husband as the plot line. I just laughed. I was like, bro, you gotta mellow out. Like, he was so angry about that out of nowhere. Had to let it out to somebody. I was the guy.
He's pounding on the grave of Emily Bronte, being like, how could you do this?
All right, quickly on the AI, then I want to finish on a streaming thing. We've gone long, but I've enjoyed the conversation as always. Follow Matt on his Substack at A Man About Film, and also on Twitter under the same handle. I touched on an optimistic opinion about AI and movies in that somebody said, look, the barriers to making great visual scenes is now rapidly approaching almost nothing, which should unlock a lot of people who know how to tell a great story that resonates with audiences. We could be entering a new golden age because it won't cost a lot to make these things, and they're not worried about losing a ton of money. That's the optimistic view. The pessimistic view, though, somebody else replied, was, yeah, but the generation now, they can't sit through 2.5 hours. They can't sit through an hour and a half. What they want is 17-minute movies as their long form of video. And so therefore, whatever comes out of AI-made long-form movies, it'll be sort of a antique-type revival meant for boomers and older. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. But part of my hesitance on that is that the younger audiences are the ones going to movies right now. They're the ones who are driving the success of box office. If you're looking at the genres of movies and the target audiences for them that are failing, that are struggling right now, it is the ones aimed at older audiences. Action movies are doing fine. You know, kids movies are doing fine. The genres that are struggling are dramas for adults. And the dad action movie has this very low ceiling now. And movies that are targeted at grownups. Look at the top grossing movies of the past. It is people targeting millennials and younger. It is Lilo and Stitch. It's Zootopia. And you look at, you know, Oppenheimer and Barbie. That was driven by younger audiences. The highest grossing movie of last year. A Minecraft movie. You know, so younger audiences, as much as they do like, you know, they do like shorter, faster paced things, they also do appreciate the cinema in a way that older audiences have kind of checked out. And I think older audiences had their reasons to check out too. I mean, Hollywood stopped making movies for them. They stopped knowing how to sell movies for them. They started pivoting them to TV. And when you can get really good stories told on TV and not leave your home, you know, who can blame a lot of audiences? And then a part of that, too, is I just think, you know, everyone's talking about, oh, my God, AI, it's going to take away audiences. It's going to be so easy. Like, people want this. And where's the example of an AI product that has made money yet? Where's the example of a feature length AI film or a, you know, AI anything that audiences are like, yes, here is $15 to $20 of my hard earned money. I want to pay to see this.
And I hear that argument, but the counter is simple. So you're betting it'll never happen. That's a long time to bet the under on it ever happening as AI gets better and better.
Yeah, and a lot of this conversation was sparked by the Tom Cruise Brad Pitt clip that made the rounds online, that even one of the co-writers of Deadpool Wolverine was like, oh God, we're screwed.
We're cooked.
We're cooked, yeah. And I gotta say, I watched that clip and it couldn't maintain my interest for the whole 15 seconds. Because
it was Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt slugging it out in the infamous Siskel and Ebert smoke and sparks factory, one of my favorite movie tropes that all action movies end in an empty factory that does not seem to produce any goods at all. You don't even know if it's a tire plant or a car place or makes refrigerators. It just has smoke and sparks.
And maybe a lava pit. Maybe right. If it's Terminator 2, it's got like a lava dome.
Right. The fight at the end of the movie at the smoke and sparks factory. Okay. Yeah, so they were slugging it out, and there was obviously contemporary dialogue that included some Epstein references, so you knew it was current at least, and it looked cinematic. But was it compelling? Was it a good story? No. It was barely nothing. You have to still put a story around it that makes people care. So,
well, and stuff like beats, you know, they can do things like have models of Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt punch each other, but can they find ways to grow that story? Can they find that? And then you have to get past the inherent issue of, if no one was on set for this thing, if no one bothered to show up to star in it, to act in it, to film it, to light it, to set it, to do all these elements, why should anyone feel any compulsion to waste their time watching it, much less to pay for it? You know, it's a non-care slope.
Yeah.
I
think you're overestimating the average Hooplehead. I think the average person does not care about that stuff like you do or I do. But I get your point on that. Last thing, and then we're done. YouTube, according to The Hollywood Reporter, is the clear leader among streaming services. Nielsen has a gauge report in which they list the percentage of all TV use via streamers. And YouTube is number one by a good margin with 12.5% of all TV streaming use. Now, you might think that is a small number for the category leader. Well, they get even smaller for everybody else. Netflix is second at 8.8%, Disney 4.9%, Prime Video 4.1%, then Roku, Paramount, Tubi, Peacock, and way down at 1.4%, Warner Brothers Discovery, aka HBO Max.
Our great nemesis.
The tweet was, "I didn't think HBO Max was doing that terribly. Oh my God." Skull emoji. Yeah. Yeah, that's not good, because they have a lot of quality IP.
It's Holy a great, shit. It's, and it's a good streaming service too. They've got the Criterion Collection for your movie snobs. They've got the HBO library. It's interesting. I mean, Pete, we always, when we talk about streaming, we do forget that YouTube is streaming. YouTube is the original streaming in its way, you know, and that's part of the reason they're the Twitter of the social media world, where Twitter will always, despite issues, always be number one because it was people's home base. You know, all these competitors can come by, but also YouTube is free and YouTube has an insane variety of content. I can watch a movie trailer on there, or I can watch a hour long dissection of the Star Wars exhibit at Disneyland, or I can
how about just 8 to 10 minute chunks of popular TV shows that are repurposed? I have no idea how that is even legal. And these channels get away with it and monetize it. Now, it's a fun rabbit hole to fall down, where I'm watching 8-10 minutes at a chunk of The Sopranos, hopping here, hopping there, all over the timeline of the actual series. But I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the time that Ralphie, you know, has to give Tony money from Pile My winning at the track. I love this thing. And I'm in. And then I gobble another one like potato chips, Miller, one after another.
Supercuts of, you know, people's favorite scenes from sitcoms that they love. I mean, part of the reason why these studios and streamers don't bother with the, you know, the IP rights is because they're like, this is good attention on some level.
Oh, really?
Hopefully, I assume that they're like, hey, you know, you can do this. It's fair use on some level. And also, hey, if you like this supercut of 30 Rock clips, you should watch 30 Rock on Peacock. Yeah. But that's part of the reason why now podcasts are on Netflix, is because Netflix wants to become more like, they all want to be like YouTube. Even Netflix, the king of streaming, wants to find ways to put different stuff onto Netflix. So it becomes more of a Walmart as opposed to a Blockbuster. So that way, you know, you can find podcasts on there. You can find games on there. You can find, obviously, movies and TV. And it's exhausting, all of this.
All right, Matt Miller, A Man About Film. Always enjoy our chats. Glad you're watching the Olympics. Enjoy the ladies tonight in figure skating. It is the absolute prime time number one thing every year. And we'll see if it's any good. And we'll talk again soon. Thank you, my friend.
Don't forget bobsled.
Couple things to end with here. First of all, always love good, positive, uplifting emails because I get a fair amount that are not uplifting nor positive. Nick Hansen writes to say, Stephen, a little joy for your morning. Good morning. It's currently 4:30 a.m. on a Wednesday, February 18th, and I'm driving with my 16-year-old son to his workout with his trainer and to get a lift in myself. Oh, by the way, he's a football prospect. I am an overweight but proud father. He is driving me there in his car. Well, lo and behold, while we're driving, his Bluetooth automatically connects, and what pops up on the Bluetooth but the Zabecast? I thought that maybe my phone had connected accidentally, but no. He said he listens to your podcast on the way to and from school every day since the morning local jocks are always doing the exact same segment every morning on his ride. You're familiar. I'm sure. You must have stuck with him riding to school with me all those times when I was listening, and now I'm passing it on to the next generation. Regardless, I thought you would like to know the show that, quote, shakes fists at clouds still can resonate with the kids today. Have a great day, Nick, in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. That does. That hits me right here. That does warm my heart. That is awesome. That is great to hear. And to all you youngins out there, let me tell you, you are navigating a world that is crazy right now. And I wish you the best of luck. I apologize for everything my generation might have done to screw it up, although I think it's more technology than anything else. I wish you knew the glory and the simplicity and the joy and the genuineness of growing up in the 80s. As I did, and I think your father did. But yeah, or maybe your father grew up in the 90s. Either way, the 90s weren't terrible either, but the 80s were it. The landscape you're navigating through now is crazy as a teenager. So try to keep your head about you. And yes, keep working out, young man. And may you have a great football career for as long as it may last. And please, knock on wood, don't get hurt. Try not to get hurt. It's hard, though. AI is getting crazy. I talked about it last episode with you guys about the movies. We just talked about it with Matt Miller. Also, the robots are getting crazy. Now, I'm going to talk about the robots first and then maybe something AI or just something that is sort of advertising eavesdropping that we all kind of know about. On the robot front, I said this many years ago with Bob and Brian when the first of the Boston Dynamics Atlas robots came out, and they showed them big, hulking, awkward, sort of humanoid, sort of humanoid looking, but still needing to be wired to a power source robots doing certain tasks. And I said to Bob and Brian, I go, you know, these are the worst robots we're ever going to have. That then spawned Brian to talk about someday we'll have robot football on the moon. Well, we're getting there. I mean, I would like to say we're a long way yet, but the long way keeps getting shorter and shorter all the time. For example, in China, they recently had their Spring Festival Gala, which is their most watched official television broadcast event. And they had a huge array of kung fu robots doing incredible stuff in perfect synchronization. In fact, the headline from the Daily Mail in the UK says, China's dancing robots. How worried should we be? Dancing humanoid robots took center stage on Monday. They lunged and backflipped, writes the Times, landing on their knees. They spun around and jumped. Not a single one fell over. The display was impressive, but prompted some to wonder, if robots can now dance and perform martial arts, what else can they do? Kyle Chan, an expert in China's technology development at Brookings, at the Brookings Institution, a policy think tank in D.C., said Beijing will often use these public robot performances to, quote, dazzle domestic and international audiences with China's technological prowess. Comparing this year's performances with last, when viewers saw a fundamentally single choreographic mode with limited motions, including walking, twisting, and kicking, the difference in just 1 year is indeed stark. The robot progress is the ability to run large numbers of near-identical humanoids in synchronized motion with stable gaits and consistent joint behavior. This one expert, Styler, don't know where I cut and pasted his name, but one expert noted, stage performance does not equate to industrial robustness yet. He said what the robots did was the result of being trained for a routine hundreds of thousands of times. You could not just tell them to change direction or do something completely different. Yet. I added that yet. It does make you think and go, damn, what are we headed towards? And we're headed towards a robot-populated world, much like all of the sci-fi movies and books from 30, 40, 50 years ago predicted. We're headed there. Look, Elon Musk shut down two of his Tesla vehicles, the S design and the X design, to make space at his factory for robot production, his Optimus production. I would not bet against what he's predicting for these Optimus robots that are humanoid in shape and nature and will sell, he thinks, around the $15,000 point, and he says will become indispensable things for people who have disabilities, old people who can't lift things, and on and on. Not there yet, but the yet is getting faster and faster all the time. When it comes to AI, a lot of people predicting that these companies that are SaaS or SaaS, software as a service, SaaS, are absolutely doomed because of AI. Somebody pointed out that they went to Claude and said, design for me the equivalent of a DocuSign platform for contracts, you know, where you click it and it does the automatic signature and it does the automatic initialing and it highlights here and it processes it. You've, I'm sure, done these many a time already. And somebody pointed out, I did this in 6 hours. Why is DocuSign not on the clock to go extinct as a business? Well, somebody pointed out, yeah, you could use that piece of AI to do all that. But if there's one little mistake, it may void all of the contracts, and then you're liable for a lot of money because of it. And therefore, where's your company? Where's your person in charge of saying, well, I was the one that made sure to set this up? DocuSign apparently has 7,000 human employees, which seems like a lot. But I believe it's because they're dealing with very important legal documents that require a certain degree of humans to backstop whatever automation, whatever computer system is doing the actual, okay, click here, sign, initial, boom, done. And I do believe that at the end of the day, despite many things becoming streamlined and cheapened and automated by AI, I got to believe many transactions will still need to be checked by, back-ended by, vouched for, or otherwise backstopped by a human being or an actual company. So we'll see. Here's the AI thing that I'm currently struggling with, and maybe it's not AI. Maybe it is literally just the way that something in my computer is. Let me tell you what it is. I have over 16 backpacks, camera bags, sling bags, and more. It's an embarrassment. I dragged them all out of the closet in the basement. I laid them all out on the floor. My wife came down the stairs and she said, "Oh my God." And I said, "You're right, honey. It's embarrassing. Why did I order? Why did I buy? Why did I hoard so many backpacks and sling bags and camera bags that I couldn't possibly use?" And the answer is, I'm an upgrade whore. I'm always looking to upgrade somehow. I look at a bag and go, "Ooh, that would be more perfect because I can then fit my drone in there and I've got this thing and it also worked." Da, 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 da. And so I buy it out of boredom. Well, I'm going to get rid of all but three. Let me keep three. On a whim, though, I put them all out on the floor. And on a whim, I decided for this trip to Arizona, I was going to use a little used cheaper backpack for the trip, one that I hadn't used in quite a while. All right. Of the 16 that I had, I made a knee-jerk decision. I said, I'm going to spot start this backpack. Well, what do I see in a little dynamic insert box on a web page that I am reading just now? Little box ad. Adorama. Okay, well, that makes sense. I do shop at Adorama. They were the company that willingly let me sign up for their VIP where I can return stuff shamelessly for 90 plus days after purchase, unlike B&H Photo that finally got sick of my shit and said, "That's it, you're out." But Adorama is my new place out of New York, and so I wasn't shocked there. It's like, okay, it's an ad for Adorama. Fine. I'm in my computer. I got login credentials. It knows this is an Adorama user. What stopped me in my tracks, though, and caused me to stare and just blink in stunned silence was it said, "Search for your next upgrade," and it had a picture of the very backpack that I had used for this trip. The very seldom used backpack. I mean, what are the odds? Yes, it's the Slinger Alpine 200 lightweight compact camera backpack. Now, I say that because I clicked on it to remember what the model was. It's a cheap backpack. It's $49. It's a camera backpack. It's kind of a hybrid. Whatever. I'd not talked about that backpack. So it couldn't have been scraping hearing me from a microphone being on. Is it possible that it could have seen this backpack using my camera on my phone or on my laptop without me authorizing it to see it and then pop it up like, hey, buddy, how about that backpack? Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, well, why would they advertise? Why would they say, hey, upgrade to this backpack that you've already purchased? That's a lot of the ways they kind of get you to click on it anyway, even though you're like, yeah, I know I have that backpack, but maybe there's something else. I just wonder, of the dozens and dozens and dozens of things I've bought, why would it show me the exact backpack that I had not used in a year and did not talk about as its bait to get me to click? Like I said, my only theory right now is it had somehow seen the backpack and then populated it that way. Crazy, right? But not impossible. All right. Zay Vegas, don't forget, filling up spots. Just got a couple more people jump on into the fray. Let me go ahead and get a name in here for you because it just came across. Where is my notification? Here we go. Carl Michech. Carl Michech has secured his bid. I think we're close to 45 bids out of the 64 max. We'll be at MGM Grand on the Sweet 16, March 26th, 27th. It's going to be a great time. Come on and watch some basketball. I did just order the hats with the patches from Stalls, my patch people up there in Michigan. So we're going to have a sweet commemorative hat for everybody who jumps on in. So get on board. If you want information about it, email me, zabe@yahoo.com. If I somehow miss your email or it was in my spam folder, email me again and I will get to it. I apologize. It's a clunky system right now, but that's the system I've chosen. That'll be it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Rate and review tickle the algorithmic overlords, and we will see you next time. When the day that lies ahead of me seems impossible to face.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.